This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight, won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman. Appreciate having you. Cool week this week. So as of yesterday, the day before this launched, I just celebrated my 30th birthday. And we celebrated this past weekend. I knew my wife had something planned for me. I didn't know what it was, and it ended up being, we went to the Poconos skirmish paintball, and she invited lots of family and friends. We had like 20 plus people go, so we had our own team and played multiple rounds of paintball. And I got to thinking about it, my wife's choice of birthday celebration was to take me somewhere, be on an opposing team, and shoot me with a paintball gun. But it was so much fun. It was really refreshing to be in that space with friends, family, and just enjoy some time to do nothing but just have a good time. And it was really a great way to celebrate my birthday. Not that I'm big on birthday celebrations. I was just really happy. Another thing happened this weekend, and it happens every year. I never understand it. So, as many of you know, if you've listened to my podcast over the course of almost 3 years now, I am very much a deer hunter. I think about white-tailed deer almost all year long, and archery hunting, and gear, and improving, and places, and all that stuff. However, there's a duration of time in the spring where I get bird brain, and I think about turkeys. And I never know when it's going to happen. It just, all of a sudden, a switch flips, and I'm going to start thinking about turkey hunting. And it happened this week. And I think it was because we had some spring-like conditions, some spring-like weather happened the beginning of this week. In fact, Tuesday, the day before here, it was in the mid-70s. That crisp mornings you get in the springtime, just crystal clear, birds singing, things are greening up, and I just started thinking about birds, thinking about turkeys, to the point where I'm actually trying to plan an early turkey hunt. I'm hoping to make a 2 or 3 day trip to Maryland this year. Started doing some research and was hopefully looking to find a partner in crime and go down there and do some turkey hunting, explore some land. I've never been to Maryland hunting. I've looked at a couple places on a map, and I walked one piece of public land in the past outside of hunting season. But outside of that, I've not done that. And I think I've done this in the past already, where I think I can't go hunt somewhere if I've never scouted and done my homework. And in an ideal situation, I would have, but I just want to get out and explore. What better way to do it in turkey season? I went through a bunch of my turkey calls, and you probably, if you listened to turkey hunting episodes last year, you heard me, I had a friend of mine, Jason Miller, on the podcast. Turkey hunting guru, and Jason makes his own custom mouth calls. And he was gracious enough to provide me a couple of them. And I've never been somebody who like knows a lot about turkey calls. I just use them. So when I got all these diverse turkey calls, I started going through and like marking down on all the cases all the different turkey sounds and volumes and rasp and pitch and all that stuff. I just marked it on the case because I really like to have a little bit of diversity in my pocket when I go to call. And I just think certain calls are better at different times. So I wanted to make sure that I had a little bit of organization in my mouth calls. And as I'm using these calls, you know, when I was done at the end of the season last year, I cleaned them up as best I could and put them in the case and stuck them in the refrigerator. So that way, hopefully they would last me this year. And I think pretty much all of them did. So looking forward to using these turkey calls this spring. If you want to know a little bit more about them, you need to reach out to Jason Miller, J. Miller Custom Calls. You can do it on Instagram or Facebook, and he can set you up. He makes an array of different calls, and I have been absolutely thrilled with the sounds that I can make on them. Diversity is fantastic for turkey calls, in my opinion, and I've got all sorts of different things in my vest that I can make sounds with these turkey calls I have not been able to make with others. And, you know, when you think about turkey calls, I think about, the cuts and the clucks and yelps mostly. You know, that's what everybody thinks about is a yelp. But really those feeding calls, those soft, subtle feeding calls, a couple of these calls I can do, as Matt Dale likes to call it, that we had on the podcast, those wheel wheels or those little under-the-breath whines and whimpers and purrs and things like that. That's what brought in the first turkey that I killed last year, was those soft, subtle calls. The one I used was actually a whine. And certain calls I can make that on, and certain ones I can't. So, really, I wanted to throw that out there and plug Jason, because A, he's a good friend of mine. And B, as we're rapidly approaching Pennsylvania season and some surrounding states are going to open a little bit sooner than us, really great opportunity for you to check out a local guy who, you know, spends a lot of time making calls and, in my opinion, has it nailed down. I'm going to keep telling you guys about his calls, because my goal is I'm going to bust his chops and tell him now he needs to call me a turkey in this spring. But in all seriousness, no, check his stuff out, guys. We're going to get to this week's episode. This week we have my good friend, Mr. Paul Campbell. Paul Campbell is the host of the Ohio O2 Outdoors podcast, along with Mr. Andrew Muntz. Good friends of mine, real nice guys. Paul is bird brain if there ever was. He thinks about turkey hunting the way I think about deer hunting, and maybe even more so. Huge advocate for turkeys, works for the National Wild Turkey Federation, and this is his time in the year where he's going to shine. And we just have an all-around fantastic BS session to start off turkey season. And we go into things anywhere from calling to being patient to some turkey hunting stories, experiences he's had with some really well-known or just high-end turkey hunters, and kind of summarize that into that conversation that just lights the fire and gets things started. So I'm going to just let it at that. We're going to get rolling with Paul. Before we do, shout out to partners Radix Hunting. Guys, I am going to be using my brand new Radix ground blind at some point this year in turkey season. I'm debating getting that second tag, and usually if I am lucky enough to kill one, I'll take the bow out and use my Radix blind. I'm looking forward to it because it's easy to set up. It's a good hub style blind, but the windows on it are absolutely killer in my opinion. They're silent and they've got better position than a lot of other ground blinds I've used in the past, and I think it's going to be fantastic for bow hunting. Also, check out Radix trail cameras and a lot of the other hunting gear that Radix offers. Stick and pick, M-Core cell cameras. I'm thinking about sticking some more cameras back out in some places for turkey hunting this year. But really, I'm always thinking about how can I use them for deer. The stick and pick accessories, they're great for turkey season, just because a lot of time I find myself wanting to put it like on a log or something that I get a perfect angle at a lower position, just because turkeys are a little bit harder. You want to set your cameras a little bit more precisely, I think, in some situations for turkeys. So check out Radix Hunting, Radix Gear, all they have to offer. Let's get to this week's episode with Paul Campbell. So finally making it happen, joining us today, Paul Campbell. Paul, how have you been? Thank you for coming on the show.
Mitch, I've been good, man, and thanks for having me. Is this number two or number three that we've done together?
I think it's number two, but the last time that I had you on, Paul, you were more of my co-host than you were the guest. We had a good friend of yours on talking about fall turkey hunting, but now we're getting into your favorite time of year, and that's bird brain season, spring gobbler.
Oh man, it is. And so we have Brett Berry on. He was talking about fall hunting. The guy's a legend. But man, spring is the time that I feel most alive, Mitch. It's the time that dictates goes on some levels. So yeah, I refer to spring years ago. I was a golf course superintendent, and in one of my newsletters to the membership. I don't know if I've not been able to like find who said this. So I will take full credit for this. But in the newsletter, I said spring is the great reawakening of life. And it's, you know, for me personally, for plants, for the animals. And I've always enjoyed that, that saying. So I'll take full credit for it, but I love it.
I enjoy spring turkey hunting, and we've talked about this, you and I, just in general. I love spring turkey hunting. It's definitely a thing I've done since I'm a young kid. I've had a lot of great memories turkey hunting. It's just so hard for me to fight the balance of life during that time of year. For me, it's even harder than it is in the fall, and it all comes down to how do you align your priorities, and that's real tough. But man, I'm kind of curious what you got going on. So first of all, if folks haven't listened to Paul, which first of all, you host of the O2 podcast, host of the Turkey Season podcast, and you also work for NWTF, is that correct?
I do, yeah. I'm a full-time employee for the National Wild Turkey Federation. I've done some podcasts for the NWTF's podcast, Turkey Call All Access. So, man, I Mitch, I'm fortunate to talk about wild turkeys, wild turkey conservation, and turkey hunting and hunters literally 365 days out of the year. Every day, you know, I talk about wild turkeys. So I'm very, very fortunate, very, very grateful for those opportunities. So nonstop.
On that topic, I have a question for you. So when I got started with podcasting, I came into this, and you know my niche and my interest has really been food plots and stuff on private land with whitetails, and I thought – man, I really have an interest in doing this. You know, maybe it's something I can really offer or showcase for myself. And then when I got into this space and had the opportunity to network with so many people, have people on my show get different philosophies, really what it opened my eyes to was the amount of things that I hadn't thought about in greater detail, the things that I maybe didn't know as much as I thought I did. And it really broadened my horizons in those topics. And it kind of humbled me. And I'm wondering, when it comes to the avenues of turkey hunting and all the people that you've been able to surround yourself with, like, do you have any major things that stand out as highlights of things you've learned when it comes to turkeys and turkey hunting?
Man, that's a great question. And I, you know, kudos to you. I think the best advice that I've ever gotten personally, professionally, was to be coachable. And that advice was given to me in like my early 20s when I thought I had, you know, the world by the balls, or whatever, the bull by the horns. Right. And I really have taken that to heart. It sounds like you have too. You're willing to learn, put your ego aside. You live with a little humility and try to learn constantly. You know, the one thing that I've learned about, we'll just, you know, say like the wild turkey, is that, I don't know anything about it. I know like very little. And the moment that I feel like I'm starting to learn how to hunt them appropriately and how to hunt them well, they do something, during a hunt that, makes me question everything that I've ever done, as a turkey hunter. And I think for me, that's part of the draw. And people that are turkey hunters that have been doing it for a long time, they'll tell you that same thing, that, the wild turkey, there's a saying, sometimes you hunt the turkey, sometimes you are the turkey. And they'll just make you look silly. And the moment you think that you've learned everything about them, you'll be standing on the side of a ridge in Pennsylvania or Oklahoma or Wisconsin, wherever you're at, and, saying, I don't know what I did wrong. I didn't, what just happened to me? And, so that's the one thing I think that I've learned, is to to be prepared for failure and to enjoy it and revel in it, waller in it when it happens and learn from it and do it with a smile and move on. And you know, the thing that I think that stands out the most for me, just being a turkey hunter and being involved in turkey hunting culture, you know, at the level that I am, is that the people, the passion that runs through, you know, turkey hunters. And it's just, it's, I think it's very unique, you know, to kind of like the North American hunter. We're an odd group, you know, we're very protective. We're very opinionated. We're very passionate. A lot of us are very close-minded to the detriment of ourselves, I think. And some people are the total opposite, and you know, they're welcoming with open arms and want to bring more into the ranks. So it's very eclectic, unique group of passionate turkey hunters. So and I love it. I love the people. That's for me at this point in my life, my turkey hunting, you know, career, using air quotes there, is I enjoy the people and I enjoy the personalities as much as I do you know, pulling the trigger and shooting turkeys. So
yeah, I think the longer we do any of this, the more we realize that it's way more about that aspect of hunting in general than it is killing stuff. You know, when you were talking about, you know, sometimes you hunt the turkey, sometimes you are the turkey, I always think of the words of the late, great Jerry Reed: when you're hot, and when you're not, when it comes to turkey hunting.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right, man. It's they are fickle little critters, and they're tough to hunt. And man, I've walked into I've had hunts, Mitch, where it's just like I felt like I did everything right, and I mean, turkeys are gobbling, I'm moving when I need to and not calling too much, you do everything right, and then you look over your left shoulder and they're 5 feet behind you and you had no idea that they were there, and they just take off running, and you're just like, that was amazing. But at the same time, you're like, I didn't get to shoot them. And I don't know, man. They have a unique ability to really humble you. And I think on the flips, you know, to pivot off of that, it's okay to go, it's to let the turkey win. And it's okay to get beat, you know, learn from those experiences. And man, you know, some of the best hunts that I've ever had, I didn't pull the trigger.
Sure.
You know, some most memorable ones. You know, you walk out the same weight you did when you walked in. So
one thing I'm thinking about, Paul, and I'm relating this to whitetail hunting. Yeah. You know, I think about the amount of really successful deer hunters out there. They might have their own styles, so to speak, but a lot of the things that make them successful when they get to that top end level and harvesting the best bucks and everything else, there's a lot of very specific things that they all do very similarly. Maybe that's how they monitor the wind, or where they access, or where they do this, or how they view the personality of a mature buck, and like there's a lot of overlap, even though they might have different styles. I'm going to give an example what I mean by that. Two people that always stand out as seeming like they're polar opposites, yet really they're not, is John Eberhardt and Dan Infault. You know, one person is into scent lock and ignoring the wind, and the other one lives and dies by the wind, and you know, will basically go from a blue collar job and go right into the field. You know, that seems very, very different, but when you think about where they're placing themselves and how they view the personality and the habits of a mature buck, they're keeping a lot of that stuff very, very much the same, and then they're executing and they're being successful. So when I think about that concept and I translate that into turkey hunting, from my point of view, it seems there is such a diverse amount of tactics for turkey hunting, and the diversity and differences in styles of hunting can all be very successful. You got guys, and we had this conversation before, where I know you loved a running gun. I know you love to move. You love to cover ground, call birds and stuff. And I do too. I just grew up sitting idle, sitting in a place that was almost like you were deer hunting in a relative food source or lek area or something, and just being patient and riding that morning out until, you know, the time was right for them to stroll through that area and maybe coax them in with a little bit of calling. Both are successful, and I can't say one is different to the other. So with all that rambling and all that stuff, like where do you find yourself thinking when you think about some of the best turkey hunters you've hunted with or spoken with and how they view turkey hunting and their styles and stuff?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. I'm gonna unpack it. You know, we'll start with, like, there's so many different ways to hunt a turkey, and you know, if you're deer hunting a turkey, that's not the way that I like to do it. You know, if you're using decoys, and I'm not saying one way is better than the other. So let's just clarify that right now. I'm just quantifying the different ways to hunt a wild turkey in this country. So, you know, if you're just sitting, you know, hunting a food source or hunting travel corridors or roost sites, whatever it may be, or if you know you sit on field edges, you know, using a decoy, if you're you know, like a lot of people do, you know, like me, you're running ridge tops, you're locating birds in the morning, you're scouting, looking for sign, whatever it is. I think the one universal characteristic that all of those people have is just an incredible amount of patience and just a tremendous amount of self-awareness. And self-awareness to, like, when I say that, like, to understand, and you know, people will call it woodsmanship, right? I mean, but it's you have enough self-awareness to know, okay, this is where I'm at physically in the woods. This is, you know, how the turkey is using this area that I'm at. This is where he wants to be, and then this is where I want to be. Like, and that's a tremendous amount of awareness and all of the things that surround that, right? Like, okay, when to call, how to call, how often to call. Do I need to move? Do I need to, go backwards? Do I need to go away from the turkey? Do I need to go, like, you know, all the way around the turkey? Do I need, you know, what type of calling, you know, am I in? What mood is this wild turkey in? You know, so I think those are the two, the people that are really, really good, and successful in the woods. I think that's the, yeah, we'll call it self-awareness or woodsmanship. I mean, that's a term that people use quite often, and just the patience to know, you know, how many times, like, when you're in a hunt and you know, like, I use this, the whitetail that I killed last November, Mitch, there was a moment in my mind where I probably said it out loud, and I do this a lot when I'm turkey hunting, like, all you have to do is not screw it up. That's it. That's all you have to do. Don't screw this moment up. And, you know, that's that awareness where it's like, okay, I'm here. I've done all the things. I just have to let this play out. So
one thing you said, Paul, and I keep going back to it in almost every time I do a podcast. You know, when I think about outdoors podcasts, there is this allure of fine detail and that little extra piece that you're going to gain that's going to make you a better hunting, and you're going to bridge the gap that much more, and you're going to become a better, more efficient hunter this much quicker because you're listening to all these people who have all these, you know, nifty tricks and tactics and, you know, what's the latest, greatest, hottest thing. And I personally get sick and tired of that because the thing I have learned talking with so many people and taking into account some of my own experiences is what you just said, patience. Patience, when you think about it outside of hunting, think about it from all avenues of life, the benefits and the value patience has within your own life, whether that's in parenting, whether that's being a husband, whether that is being a turkey hunter, deer hunter, whatever, being patient and taking all things into consideration and and making a well-informed decision in that situation, almost all the time you're going to lead into a more successful situation. From the avenues of hunting, yeah. Maybe you won't actually kill something, but patience can teach you more than being impatient. Now, on the flip side of that from turkey hunting, Paul, I do want to gain your thoughts on this. So I was talking to you about my experiences in sitting in one location quite often. I learned a ton about turkeys, some of their behaviors, you know, how things move throughout a morning, how maybe, you know, weather might influence that, how pressure influences the property I hunt, all kinds of stuff like that you take into consideration throughout a hunting season. Mm-hmm. And I was, most of the time I was bow hunting in those situations. It was sitting in a location close to roost, maybe in an interception of a food plot or just a bench that, you know, turkeys would congregate quite often, and I was sitting there and being patient for turkeys to kind of do their thing and come into my setup and get a shot. And what I've learned, even though I've been patient, I've learned when, you know, I've learned some things of how, when to call, that sort of thing. The other thing I've realized is when you put me into other environments, sometimes I'm a little bit overcautious, and maybe that's not always the best answer. I've hunted with some people that they're just super duper aggressive, and I almost get like uncomfortable doing that because in my mind it's not right. Talk me through hunting turkeys with different people and the different styles. Like, how do you approach doing that? Because it's, you get into really weird situations when you hunt with different people. I guess it's all expectations up here in your head, and sometimes you just got to let it roll.
Yeah, man, that's a great question. So I don't want to take anything away from the people that I've hunted, but up until last year, I had never hunted with someone that I would consider like a better turkey hunter than me. And I'm not saying any disrespect to the friends that I hunt with, but, a lot of times, like I'm taking new people out but I've always been the best turkey hunter in the group. Right. And so people have always turned to look at me and say, well, what do we do? I'm like, boom, that's what we're doing. Right. Last year I got to hunt with a guy named, Mike Pentecost. He's the owner of, Woodhaven Custom Game Calls. He is probably one of the best turkey hunters in the country. So it was neat because I was just like, what are we doing? You know, and I just watched him. I just followed him through the woods, right? I was able to I didn't say a word most of the days. We hunted 3 days together. I just like watched him move through the woods, you know, watched how he interacted with the environment, how he interacted with the calls with the turkeys that we did here and his thought process. And I remember we were sitting on this ridge, around the edge of this clear cut in northern Alabama. And it was cold. It was like 38 degrees. It'd been windy for 2 days, man. We're just getting our faces kicked in. And we had some turkeys, you know, in the area, and he lit this little piece of lighter pine. And he said, this is a half hour candle or whatever he called it. Right. And for lighter pine, it's just like it's rotten, basically wood from the loblolly pine that, you know, all of that sap concentrates and it just burns forever. Like, we call it fat wood up here. They call it lighter pine. And so he's like, Paul, he's like, when this burns out, we're getting up. So we just sat by this little piece of pine. We're warming our hands. And he just started talking about like turkey hunting and his experiences and what he's learned. And he said one thing. He's like, you kill turkeys two ways. You kill turkeys with your feet. Kill turkeys with your seat.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
And so meaning like you either run and find one that's looking to die, or you sit there and you wait and you know that you're in the area and you know, or close to it, and then you bring them in. So that was one of those like, no crap. But you know, think about it that way. Like you just, and that's where like all of the, you know, the patience and all that stuff that we've already talked about, like it's two separate ways. And so you're getting to hunt with someone like that, that was just like, he was so adaptable to say, okay, we're going to hunt this way, or we're going to hunt, you know, if the scenario dictates, the terrain dictates, the weather dictates, like we're going to move around and be adaptable. So I think like the, you know, every turkey hunter out there is different, but you know, a guy like Mike and someone that, you know, another guy that's really adaptable, like Parker McDonald, you know, from the Southern Collective, you know, I've not hunted with him, but I've talked to him and listened to him enough. Like that dude can hunt any terrain, any way. And he's just consistent over and over and over again. Right. You know, like when you're hunting with new people that you've never hunted, there's kind of like this, it's funny because like Cuz Strickland has talked about this a lot. There's kind of like this unwritten like code of etiquette within like turkey hunting circles. And so there's always like this weird moment where it's just like, okay, am I going to call? Or are you going to call? Like who's leading this hunt? How we doing this? It's just really funny. And so, you know, so there's always that moment when you're getting into a new hunt, with someone you've never hunted with where you're like, all right, am I going to make this guy mad if I rip off a crow call or an owl call or like, you know, like what's the vibe, man? And I think it, you know, it comes down to me is being willing to learn from people that I've never hunted with, you know, just because I think they're a better turkey hunter than Mitchell Shirk doesn't mean that I'm not going to like, I can still learn something from you because, you know, you hunt differently. You see the world differently than I do. So I don't know if that answered your question the right way, but,
no, I think, you know, it does, man, because you're talking about the being in the seat or your feet. And
yeah.
I think so commonly, let's face it, why do a lot of people love to spring turkey hunt? They love to rip a cut, rip a yelp, and get a turkey fired up and gobbling.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to find a bird that is just hot as the dickens? And it doesn't matter what you give him, he's going to hammer and he's going to run in and you're going to shoot him in the face. Everybody loves that. I had a bird do last year. I mean, the bird I killed last year was outside. I wouldn't say it's outside my comfort zone to hunt this way. It's just not the way I've hunted a lot. I hunted in a new place that had a low turkey density and it did not have I didn't have a lot of familiarity with the land. Mm-hmm. I hunted there maybe once or twice years ago, but it was big woods and it was not my typical stopping grounds. And I knew the only way I was going to find a turkey is if I put boot leather down and if I walked and I covered ground and I stayed patient. And, you know, the morning was it was the opening day of Pennsylvania turkey season last year was miserable. It was foggy. It was on and off. Hard rain to just misting. It was one of those days that people go, let's go to the diner and get breakfast. And I made my mind up. I drove 4 hours to go to this cabin to be with family and friends. And I went there to turkey hunt. I don't care if this is uncomfortable. I'm hunting until noon and I'm going to explore new territory. So I just kept covering ground, hoping by dumb luck, I would find a turkey that would want to play the game. And the coolest part about it was leading up right around 11 o'clock, we've got that last hour that we can hunt in Pennsylvania, and I heard a bird gobble on his own. And I, like, in my mind, I don't know what you think when you hear that, Paul, but when I hear a bird gobble on his own after 10 o'clock, I think, this is like one of those 50% birds. Like, there is a 50% chance he's going to come right in and I'm going to kill this thing. So I never even made a call to this bird. I just went down the ridge in the direction I heard him. I had a lot of cover in between me and him. And I got to the point where I broke out of these pines and I knew where the crest of the ridge was to go down over. And I thought, I think he's just down over that lip. And I was on the top. And I thought, I'm as close as I'm going to get without, I think I'm going to bump him. Now I'm going to set up and I'm going to give him that first call. And that first call I gave, like, he didn't gobble right away. And I called pretty lightly. And then I called shortly thereafter and he gobbled. And then he gobbled, I think I called to him three times. He gobbled every single time. And the third time it was like, holy cow, he's in my lap. And there he was. And he came running right in. And that was a situation of feet just covering ground, being patient, and like being persistent, and finding the turkey that wanted to play that game. The reality of that is, I mean, if I had to put into percentage the amount of birds I've killed or hunted, been a part of, that read that script that everybody looks for in a spring gobbler hunting, it is way less than 50% of the time. It might even be less than 25% of the time. What's your experience?
Man, so if you were turkey hunting, And it's 11 o'clock. And in Ohio, after the last 3 weeks of the season, we can hunt until dark.
Yeah.
This is one of those, like, there aren't many absolutes in turkey hunting. But I feel like this is one that if a turkey at 10:30 gobbles on his own, unprovoked by a crow or an owl or an airplane, whatever, just gobbles to gobble, that is the turkey in the woods that is willing to die that day. Like, he's willing to die. And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that turkey that's willing to die. And dude, if I hear that, I'm just like, oh, buckle up, son. And like, you did everything right in that scenario. It's just like, boom, you hear that turkey. I have the self-awareness to say, okay, that turkey wants to play the game. He's willing to die today. Where does he want to be? How do I get there? You know, like, that's the perfect turkey hunt, right? And those are the ones that you want all the time. You know, it doesn't always happen like that, but, you know, I think, Mitch, give me your question one more time. I lost my train of thought.
You're getting excited. Yeah. I know, bird brain. You're thinking about that 10 o'clock bird. I get it. No, my question was, I said, you know, that scenario that played out for me opening day last year, that's like everybody's dream. Find that bird that wants to play the game, come run in, gobbling, excited, and shoot him. But in all reality, the amount of turkeys that I've been, like, in pursuit of, whether that was for myself or calling for somebody else, the amount of times that it played out that way is way less than 50% for me. And I'm curious, like, when it comes to that ideology, how often does that actually happen for you in the turkey woods?
Man, like, those where they just...
It happens. I mean, it is pretty rare, I think, where... there's not some sort of, like, you know, hitch or movement or reaction that you need to have as a hunter. You know, if you are, you know, just ripping through the woods, you know, and calling and trying to find that turkey, you know, if you're hunting like that, you really they make you work for it, man. So I think and, you know, I think that if you said, hey, you know, the turkey died and, you know, I had to do it, you'd say, yeah, that was a textbook hunt, you know, even if he didn't gobble a lot, you know, but you're still reacting and using that self-awareness and that patience. So I guess that textbook term could be like a relative term, you know, that you could slot in, wherever. But yeah, where one just is piping off and you don't have to do much, those are pretty rare, man. Just got to be in the right spot and know when not to mess it up, right?
Yeah, and that's, like I said, that is easier said than done. But I bring that up just because I think all too often people get hung up on that being, like that's going to be what actually happens. And the other thing, too, I think people do, and I've been guilty of this, too, is I used to get really, really hung up on what, like, what the calls that I made sounded like. Not necessarily, like, the types of calls, like a yelp, a cluck, a purr, this and that. I used to get so hung up that my calling didn't sound as good as Joe Schmo's. And here we get into the weeds of fancy marketing when it comes to the hunting industry. I mean, perfect example. I just did a podcast last week that was going on about fancy marketing in the food plot world and people being taken advantage of because they think they need this, you know, XYZ, and that's going to make them better. So translate that into turkey hunting. I can think of so many instances of absolutely phenomenal turkey callers that can make sounds with a mouth that I swear sometimes sounds better than an actual turkey themselves. And they market like this specific call is what's going to make you do that. But in all reality, Paul, I have called in some turkeys that didn't really care what my, if it didn't sound like that ideology perfect hen. And in fact, turkey sound, every turkey sometimes sounds a little bit different from one to the next. I've heard some turkeys that sounded like an awful, awful, like, hunter on a box call. And you think, there's no way that's a turkey. And all of a sudden, there she pops out and go, good Lord, are you a smoker? Like, what are you doing, girl?
Yeah.
So, like, I bring that up because I want to know, like, I'm not knocking anybody who's a great turkey caller, but what's the level of importance in your mind, Paul, when it comes to, like, just absolutely flawless calling versus woodsmanship and turkey hunting?
Man, that's a great question. And, you know, I think that there are times, there are hunts where you're going to have a really just weary, kind of shy, very reserved turkey that if you are an exceptional caller, that might be the difference of him coming in to look and see what's going on, right? I think that's pretty rare, honestly. I think that it, you know, man, I guess it doesn't matter how good or bad your call is. Right. If you are in the right place and you sit still and you were quiet and your gun is patterned and you know your firearm and you figure out where these turkeys want to be and you can make a sound that sounds like a turkey, I think you're going to be okay. I really do. I heard a guy say one time, you know, he's like a real hen, a real life hen turkey would never win a calling competition. Ever. Mm-hmm. And he's probably right. I mean, cause like you said, I've heard people that I think sound better than hen turkeys. And so what do we know, right? We're just emulating the real thing. So be proficient at whatever call you're comfortable with. Mouth call, box call, pot call, you know, one of the wind instruments, in the turkey wood, doesn't matter, man. Whatever call that you are comfortable with, you know, learn to make a couple of vocalizations and don't get hung up on, well, I don't sound like, I'll use a Pennsylvania guy, because he's the best, Matt Van Sykes. I don't sound like Matt Van Sykes. Well, guess what? No one else does. So don't compare yourself, right? And just be good with what, comfortable with the call of your choice.
And, you know, one thing I will say when it comes to the calling, like if I had to pick something that I want to be better at and improve upon, I really, you know, everybody wants to have that textbook yelp into a cut, that loudmouth hen that could just get a bird to gobble. You know, that's quote unquote the cool thing to do. Really what I want to try to be better at, I want to try to be better at that under your breath turkey noises. Like when you've if you've ever been into a situation where you were close to a bunch of birds that you could hear that calling. Like I had last year, one thing I'll never forget, I had Matt Dale on my podcast. Actually, I had him on a couple times now. But one thing he said, you know, he's very big and open to say there's no such thing as a call shy turkey. And his he went into the context of that. And the one thing he said to me that resonated so much, he goes, if you've ever been in a situation where you were close to turkeys, whether that you were under their roost or you had a small flock come in and they were feeding, the noises that they make that you hardly ever get to hear with your human ears, they're incredible. And to me,
it's
constant, and it promotes realism into the wooded situation. And you know, I had a couple situations last year where I started to try to utilize that into my calling, and I saw it help. So I find that there's probably just as much value in that type of calling as there is trying to have the absolute best Yelp to cut, you know, thing that everybody loves. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone wants the fireworks, right? They want to get out there like Bo Brooks, just hammering on those mouth calls. The one thing that I have learned from really good turkey hunters like Mike Pentecost and Dave Owens and Will Primos and these guys that have been around, they do not call very loud. They might call often, but it's not super loud. And that's one thing. I think that I know like someone would disagree with this, right? But I think it's probably easier to call too loud than it is to call like too much in the context of like just making turkey sounds, right? Like if you're trying to strike up turkey or you're working birds that are, you know, a distance away. And, but I mean, there are times like you better shut up, right? But I think just like in general, I think that like, you know, if I'm ripping a tube call or a mouth call or a box call, like as loud as I can, I think that might impact a turkey's perception on you being real more so than, oh, that turkey yelped 7 times instead of 4. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I think that would probably, you know, the actual volume. And now don't get me wrong, when you're trying to locate, hammer away, man, do throttle down on that sucker, right? But, calling is one of those, like the intricacies of it, like, you can watch a million YouTube videos. You can listen to every podcast out there about turkey hunting. Listen with people like me, people like Matt Dale, Matt Van Sice, Dave Owen, whoever it is, right? I think that like it doesn't supplant the need to be in the woods and learn through experience to where experience and failure, right? You gain experience by failure and success. So I think that like that's the, I, you know, When you're out there hunting, you're going to say, oh, okay, I should have done this. I could have done this. Maybe, you know, this, and then the next time you get that chance, you're going to implement that, you know? And if you don't, then you're not growing. You're not learning. So, I think like, especially for like new turkey hunters, they don't want to experiment with like calling styles or calls or sequences or when to do it. Have the courage to just say, okay, you know what, today I'm going to try this style. You know, I'm going to try this, you know, get away from that cut. I'm going to try, you know, something different just to see if that works. You know, I had a guy teach me, you know, the way to hold the pot call and move the call, you know, while I'm calling, how to like to manipulate, to add like just that little extra like sound and realness and depth really to the call. And he said, he's like, you know, when you're hunting, have the confidence to do this out there. And I was just like, it's a great statement. Have the confidence to try this. Because when the nerves, man, you can practice that in your backyard, but when the nerves are geared up, that's when you really need to, you know, to be able to do that. So,
yeah. Well, so one thing we've been talking about, I want to ask you this question. we as hunters in the niche that we enjoy so much, we can get fascinated by the little intricate details and little pieces of gear that we think is going to make us better. And we put so much detail into, oh, I got to have this piece of equipment, and this piece of equipment, and this gadget, and that gadget. Like, it happens. A lot of people succumb to it, whether it's turkey hunting or deer hunting or whatever. And it happens all too often. And I here's a good example. I personally like to make fun of turkey hunters specifically when they start getting into the details about their shotgun, because let's face it, turkey hunters love their shotgun. They love to talk about the size shot they're using, the type of shot they're using. Is it a 3-inch shell? Is it a 3.5? Are they using a 20 gauge? Are they using a 12 gauge? Do they have a scope? Do they have a red dot? Do they use a bead system? Like, and they get into this this major rabbit hole discussion of a turkey hunting thing, and there's nothing wrong with it, right? Any little piece of gear or something that gives you a little bit more edge in your opinion, you know, do it. That's fine. But the reality of it is, my 12 gauge that I have is an 870 that I bought cheap. I bought one of the cheapest extra fold chokes that I could. I shot a Longbeard XR through that, and that is a flawless turkey load on paper out to 50 yards for me, and I have next to nothing invested into that, and it's a good gun, and I'm proficient with it. So I'm giving this whole backstory because, Paul, I want your perspective when it comes to that concept of gadgets, gizmos, who's it's, what's it's that we like to have on to make us that much better. Truly give me what is the most important thing, the basics, the bare essentials to go into the woods and be successful. What's just fluff and what's the meat and potatoes?
Yeah, great question. So I did a podcast with the Hunting Gear Podcast with Dan Johnson. It was either last season or the season before. I honestly can't remember. And he asked, it's a gear podcast. He asked me, he said, what's the number one piece of gear that a turkey hunter needs? And I will answer that question this way for the rest of my life. And it's the most boring answer that you can possibly have. And it's a good pair of boots. That's it. Like, that's it. A good pair of boots. Because if your feet hurt or you're sliding all over the freaking Pennsylvania hills, you're going to have a bad time. Right. So I did a podcast with some guys from Alabama, and it's a Habitat podcast, and they asked me, what does a person need to get into turkey hunting? I said the same thing. I said, good pair of boots, a shotgun that you're comfortable with and that is deadly and that you understand how that shotgun works, a call that you're proficient with, and whatever camo you have laying around, in your house. That's it. That's it. That's all you need. We as just as humans, and I'm guilty of it, like we overcomplicate like the process of hunting deer or turkeys. Or a waterfowl. Have you ever been out with a waterfowl guy? a goose hunter? And I like to do it. I mean, I've seen guys that have literally like trailer fulls of decoys. It's crazy, right? Like we just complicate things. I've enjoyed, kind of thinning out what I bring into the woods over the years. One, because I've learned what I like, right? I don't need to go out. I might go out with two turkey calls. If I'm not having any luck, there's going to be, I have a couple calls that, are a different pitch or a tone that might elicit a response. But you don't need to get crazy, man. I think like you're talking about the shotgun. I cannot stress enough to people to use an extra full or an extra full, depending on, but an extra full like turkey choke, like modified and proof cylinder and even full chokes, depending on what type of ammunition you use, might not be as deadly as they need to be. No one wants to wound an animal, right? So use that extra full choke. That's like the only thing. Use it, shoot it, learn the pattern, adjust as accordingly, whether it be ammo, or adjustable sights on your shotgun, whatever it is, but just know how your firearm operates in the woods. That's it. Know how it operates. And don't exceed that. if I have a gun, I had an 870 that I would shoot Longbeard XR out of. I think I had the True Glow, sight, you know, or a choke tube.
Yep, yep.
There was no way in hell I could shoot that at 50 yards. Some of that might have been me. Some of that might have been the limitations of the firearm. But 30 yards, oh my gosh, it's the best gun I've ever had. I killed a pile of turkeys with it at 30 yards, you know? So understand the limitations of your firearm and have that awareness to say, and that discipline, say, okay, my gun is only good for no more than 40 yards. That turkey's at 52 yards. I'm not going to shoot that turkey, right? I'm not going to rush this. I'm not going to, you know, cheapen the process. So that's it, man. Know your firearm. The equipment side, I mean, it is, it's an interesting conversation. I've bought all sorts of stuff over the years. Just because I like turkey calls. I think they're cool. I like experimenting with them. I like playing with them. But you don't need to go overboard, you know? I've gone down the rabbit hole of, like, I shoot a Franke Affinity, 20 gauge. This is the first year that I am shooting a red dot, and I'm only shooting a red dot just because, like, you know, I'm 42, right? Like, so my eyes have started to change at low light, you know? I've had some, my vision's, oh, it's so good. Like, I'm not like freaking Mr. Magoo out here, Mitch, but you know, I missed a turkey, 2 years ago. I missed two of them this year or last year. Killed a couple out, you know, so I switched to the red dot, just, you know, talking to some older turkey hunters. Everyone's like, dude, just get a red dot. Like it will solve those low light vision issues that you're having. So
yeah, that makes sense. And that's really a good point of, like, you talk about self-awareness and just really understanding limitations and how to prove that. That's a great use of that. I just get hung up on people when they have something good that is working for them. Why do they have to change it? And I understand people like to tinker and learn, but I think about that in archery all the time. And I was this way at one point. Like the newest, latest, greatest piece of archery equipment that came out, I thought I had to have it, and that was going to make me better. And I finally wised up. Those people that were older, more mature than me, that made fun of me, their you know, things that they brought up and talked about, that you don't need all this crap, just use something that works and is proficient, like, that's finally ringing true to me. So, like, take into account my bow. I have a bow that's it's a Bowtech Boss 2016 or 2017. I love that bow. It's my style. It fits my style. It fits my comfort. Yeah. And I've killed a lot of stuff with it. And I have a hard time deviating far from the system that's made me proficient. And I think a lot of times, like, when I think about that with turkey hunting, you know, I've got a great turkey gun that I have confidence in, and there's a lot of people that have that, but think, well, now if so-and-so came out with the great, this turkey load, I've got to try that because that's going to make it better. How much better do you need if you're proficient out to 50 yards? And I know there's people that'll argue, say, well, there's loads that are getting out to 70 yards. And I think that's a controversial topic too, because guys are like, you know, I want to have the most proficient load to be as effective as possible. But then you have that saying of, well, are we starting to take out the hunting aspect out of it if we're killing birds at 70 yards? There's so much controversy that goes into that, and I don't know how to navigate it. My biggest thing, I just want to try to be like, I used to take so much crap into the woods, deer hunting, turkey hunting, whatever. Like, I just had all this stuff in a backpack, like turkey vests especially. Like, I would put a turkey vest on, and I would have every pocket filled with some type of turkey call and turkey hunting gadget. And I'm just to the point now where I get tired of doing that. I want to be as minimalist as possible just because I enjoy the hunt that way.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I do want to address the shooting turkeys at 70 yards, because it is a very controversial topic. And I can reasonably assume that most of your listeners are deer hunters. And I saw a guy, and I'm not bad mouthing this guy, but he shot a deer with a bow at 110 yards. Mm. Killed the deer, recovered the deer. And it wasn't like a big recovery. Like, it was, you know, an ethical death. And this guy was just getting roasted online, and I don't know if he deserved to be roasted online. But I saw, like, the one of the comments that I saw was just like, just because you, you know, getting a deer at 20 yards makes you a better hunter than being able to shoot one at 110 yards. You're just a better archer. Like, you're a proficient archer, right? It doesn't make you a better hunter. And this shouldn't be a controversial statement, right? Getting a deer, the deer that I shot in November, missed, so I got it at 12 yards. I shot that deer at 12 yards, right? Like, I worked really hard to get into that position. And it's the same with turkey hunting, right? Just because I can shoot a turkey at 70 yards doesn't mean that I should. I've never shot a turkey over 40 yards, ever. And I can promise you I never will shoot a turkey over 40 yards. That's just the discipline that I ask me that question at 23 years old. You know, when I'm in the business of killing as much shit as I can, it's probably a different story, right? But at this point, I like getting them to 20 yards, man. I like hearing them drum. I like hearing them spit. I like hearing their wings drag the ground, man. I like seeing that freaking brilliant white head. I like seeing the breath come out of their mouth when they gobble. I can't see that at 70 yards, right? And if they're wise enough to stay at 70 because I'm not in the best setup and they don't see a turkey down there and they're smarter than me, that turkey's won. I didn't do the things right to be, you know, in the position to, you know, hidden well enough or using the terrain. You know, I mean, obviously, like, in this scenario, I'm not using decoy. I wasn't, you know, I didn't do all of the things, right? The turkey is one, right? If you consider this a battle. And that shouldn't be a controversial statement, but just because you can do something doesn't mean that you have to, right?
Paul, I agree with that statement 100%, and I think there's so much validity to that. My mm-hmm. only rebuttal, and it's nothing that goes against what you're saying, it's more mm-hmm. of a rebuttal to the guy who right away wants to be a keyboard warrior and bash mm-hmm. somebody. So, like, for the instance, somebody with a bow shooting a deer at 110 yards talking about being a proficient archer and talking bad about them. I've noticed people like to make decisions about how well you shoot based upon how badly they shoot, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the proficiency in doing something ethical, everybody, and maybe this is just me being, you know, an optimist, but I would like to think that people are doing the best job they can to know the proficiency of what they're capable of, what is ethical for their equipment and their capabilities, and make that decision. And yeah. I will say, while I agree with Paul, if somebody can do something and they know they're doing it efficiently and they're not going to be taking away or potentially wounding an animal or something like that, I understand risk sure. goes up, but if your proficiency level is there, like, you don't need to bash somebody based on if they are proficient in that sense. All that to say, Paul, I am right there with you. I've yeah. gone down the rabbit hole of wanting to shoot my bow farther and extend my range, and same thing with turkeys. And now I'm to the point where I just like hunting. I like getting stuff in close. I like the matching the wits. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing better than a turkey coming into 10, 15, 20 yards and just saying, you are never going to yeah. leave that position. You are dead.
Yeah. No, it's great, man. And I'm with you. I don't like the hate that people get online. You know, because Levi Morgan can shoot a freaking ram at 106 yards with a bow doesn't mean that I can, right? But that dude's really good. He's really good at killing stuff. And he, you know, practice and hard work and, you know, knowing your, all of those things lead in. And that's, you know, the fair chase and that, that's such a big topic that you and I are way too dumb to dive into that. But man, I don't know, man. I like getting them in close. I think it's cool. I mean, like that buck that I shot this year, I've never been that close to a big deer like that ever. It was amazing.
You that know, was the deer that the almost time. Turned you from turkeys, isn't it?
Not at all. No, not a chance. But I will say, like, I appreciate it. Like, I called that freaking deer in, you know, with a grunt tube. And I'm sure there's people, you know, purist deer hunters like, oh my God, you did what? But man, it was so cool just seeing his face, seeing his, you know, that hair bristled up and those muscles. That was awesome, man. you know, and I like the, and once again, that's just because I've been doing this long enough that like I enjoy that, you know, that side of it. You know, 20 years ago, I probably stopped that buck at 25 yards and shot him, you know.
But yeah, sure.
And same thing with the turkey. You know, you just, everyone changes. You're, I think the one thing that I think that people should always kind of process in their minds, you know, not necessarily during the hunt, like at the moment of I'm going to pull the trigger, but you know, don't cheapen the process, whatever it is, right? You know, enjoy it. Don't cheapen the process for you, and don't cheapen the process for the critter you're going after, you know, if that makes any sense. So.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, this has been a great conversation. I always enjoy talking with you. I'm hoping that one of these years we're going to get the opportunity to do some turkey hunting together, whether you find your way over to Pennsylvania or I make my way over to Ohio or something. I'm hoping we can make that happen here soon. But, man, before you go, tell us your where people can follow content with you. And I want to get a real quick rundown of the 2024 Paul Campbell Turkey Tour.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram, PaulCampbell322 is my Instagram there. I have a website, turkeyseason.com. Imagine that, Mitch. It's really neat. So if you are planning an out-of-state hunt, you can go to turkeyseason.com. You can click on the map. It's at the top of the page. And there is an interactive map of all 49 states with a wild turkey season in there, season dates, license costs, you know, statistical data on weather, statistical data on harvest, all of that is available there. Pretty neat resource for folks. So you can find me there. The Turkey Season podcast is ripping right now. Mitch, I'm doing a four-part series on a guy named Ben Rogers Lee, who's a really influential turkey hunter from, let's see, Alabama, passed away in 1991. The third volume of that goes live tomorrow. I've got episodes with Harold Knight. Those are up there. Dave Owen, Team Wingbone. I've got Will Primo's going next week. It's just great, man. If you're a turkey hunter, I think you're really going to enjoy that. So today, as of this recording, today is what? April 4th. Yeah, my first turkey hunt is Thursday, April 12th in the beautiful state of Texas. I will be there for a couple of days, Rio hunting. I've got tags in my pocket from Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, and Nebraska, and I think I'm going to end up in Tennessee at some point as well. So that's the full turkey tour, and I'm hopeful to get my lifetime Grand Slam, which is the all of the four major subspecies in the country, the Eastern, the Osceola, the Rio Grande, and the Merriam turkey. So this year I've got the Rio and the Merriam hunt in Nebraska. So, man, that's it, buddy. Very, very, very excited.
Good deal. That's an exciting thing to do. Well, hey, good luck turkey hunting this year. Stay patient and have fun, buddy. Appreciate you coming
on. That's it. No, my pleasure, Mitch. Thanks, sir.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.